parties want to reach an agreement, they can. Nothing else stands in their way. Everything else is a technical or procedural consideration, but those can be overcome with the commitment to reach a solution.
Right. And several of the schedules proposed in the first session of the High-Level Revitalization Forum, such as release of the prisoners of war and child recruits, have overrun. So would you think this will affect or have a bearing on the next phase of the forum?
Unfortunately, this isn't the first time that timelines have been missed. One could also point to some of the provisions in the December 25th session of policy, but indeed every other agreement in most of the time frames in the original 2015 peace agreements are also missed. I think the question is to whether the timeline matters depends on the reasons for the delay, if it's about political commitments or the genuine difficulty in implementing these things. Of course, when it comes to the release of prisoners of war, the presumption is that that can be done expeditiously, it can be done as a sign of goodwill, and there should be really no delay in actually that occurring. So the question then becomes, why is there a delay? What is the reason? I think the trust between the parties is limited, and a failure to adhere to some of these commitments doesn't help build that trust. So in that broader sense, it does bear on the next phase, and if there is going to be a solution, it's going to come about if there is sufficient trust between all of the parties involved.
Right. And what should be done to prevent the process from slipping away, just like the case in 2015?
Well, I think you have to look first at the mediation process itself. The High-Level Revitalization Forum is not formally called a mediation, but it's mediation in other terms, by another name. The December session was very brief. The break between the December session and the resumption next week is more than a month. If there is progress made on some of the key issues that will require revision from the existing peace agreement, then the process should continue. It shouldn't adjourn for another lengthy break. Momentum leads to momentum. As you know, in December, there was some optimism that the agreement reached would result in a change. Mm-hmm. Some people are disappointed by the continued violations. There's still obviously a very large humanitarian crisis in the country. The point is that momentum in negotiations, in discussions, in deliberations, in the forum, if they exist, should continue. And one of the key things to avoid slipping is to maintain that momentum. If there isn't momentum, then the questions about the design of the process and what its objectives are need to be re-examined. But I would strongly encourage the facilitators of the High-Level Revitalization Forum to ensure that it isn't a question of waiting up the clock. It isn't a question of saying, well, we have these 5 days or 7 days or 10 days to talk about this and then we adjourn. There is a need to press on and ensure that the process doesn't continue for indefinitely, but also without generating that sufficient momentum to overcome difficult problems that exist.
Right. And now the international community has been pressing for progress. What more can be done by the regional and international community to avert further crisis?
I think it's very straightforward in many respects from the international and the regional community. There need to be clear expectations for what the initial progress of the High-Level Revitalization Forum should be. That was done in December to some extent. There was a focus on getting the secession of hostilities agreement in place. Now it must be very clear what constitutes success. How do you measure that in terms of the outcome? Because it isn't going to be that on the first day or the first week all of the problems can be solved. One has to be realistic as well. But it should be very clear that, for example, the issue of improving the compliance, the verification, and monitoring of the secession of hostilities, but also taking that interim arrangement, because that is what a secession of hostilities agreement is, only a temporary stage, to make it something more permanent? And what are the conditions of what are the parameters that are required in order to allow that to happen? If those expectations are clearly outlined, then you'll have a sense of what success looks like. The other thing which is really important is to recognize that elections in 2018, as are called for in the original timeline of the peace agreement, are unrealistic. That is something which potentially derails the process if there is this idea that elections can be continued with. A declaration, an understanding, a commitment by all the parties involved to that reality would also be a helpful thing. These are the kinds of interim benchmarks that could be instituted in the second stage of the HLRF to measure outcomes as something positive.
Right. And just before you go, I don't know, but do you think sanctions as proposed by the African Union would have a positive effect? Some individuals have already been sanctioned by the U.S. Are these sort of restrictions even effective?
Well, sanctions are never fully the answer. The point of sanctions, I think, is twofold. One is to deter, and one is to incentivize. And we have to ask ourselves, if, for example, in terms of the violations of the Professional Authorities Agreement, would imposing consequences be a deterrent to future violations? And arguably, you can make that case that it should be a deterrent, it could be a deterrent, but it isn't only a matter of international action, it's also a matter of action that has taken in South Sudan. So international action, international sanctions are certainly part of the picture, but they're not the only answer. And that's why it's important that they be a component, but not necessarily the end of the story. For IGAD and the African Union to threaten consequences and then to do nothing diminishes their credibility. And so if IGAD and the AU are serious when they say that there should be people held accountable, then one of the tools they have available to them is sanctions. And therefore, rather than simply making a threat and then not acting on it, threats are only credible if there is something to back it up. And so in that case, sanctions, if they are carefully designed and considered and target the right individuals and networks and institutions that may be causing further destruction and impeding the peace process in South Sudan, they may be, as I say, part of the toolbox that should be used.